The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. Unlimited broadband so you can download, upload and stream as much as you like.
Watching the coronavirus press briefing on Monday evening, you might have seen beside Dr. Houlihan and others was a 27-year-old Dublin footballer and Republic of Ireland international at one point, Siobhan Killeen. And she was talking about her experience of having the coronavirus at such a young age. And I thought, well, that's somebody we need to hear more from. I'm delighted to say she's taken a little break from her work in a hospital, as it happens, this morning to say hello. Siobhan Killeen, good morning to you.
Hi, Ryan. How's it going?
Thanks for joining us today. Could you tell us a bit about your career as an athlete first, as a footballer, as a sports person?
Yeah, I have two older brothers, so I suppose as a kid I always wanted to play with them, so I had no choice in taking up a football. So I started soccer from very early age with Raheen United. I played both Gaelic and soccer then right up till Leaving Cert. Mm-hmm. And I had to obviously put the head down and study, and I had too much pulling me in different directions, so I gave up the Gaelic, unfortunately, and proceeded with the soccer. And I had a great career with soccer. And then 2 years ago, I kind of felt like I hadn't fulfilled maybe what I could have in GAA. So I switched back and I hung up the soccer boots and picked up the Gaelic love. So that's kind of been my career. And I'm with Clontarf GAA and the Dubs now. So it's great and I'm really enjoying it all.
Okay, so You've known many a field about the place. Anyway,
yeah.
Good on you. Can I ask you the rude question of how old you are, Siobhan?
I'm 27.
And we've stolen you from your work this morning for a few minutes to take this call. Could you tell us what you do for a living?
I'm a radiographer in Mater Hospital in Dublin.
And the Mater Hospital is a pretty important place at the moment, a very busy place there, no doubt. We'll talk about that in a minute. But we asked you on today to just thrash out a little bit about what you had spoken about at the press briefing with Dr. Houlihan. Talk to me, if you wouldn't mind, about that moment when you felt, I don't feel good, I don't feel right. When did this happen?
It happened in late March, and I had been working all weekend and training all weekend, and I felt perfect up to Sunday evening. And I just remember I became overcome with the sweats and a fever, and I remember giving out yards to my poor parents for having the heating on because I was upstairs boiling. But then I started to have the shivers, and my legs were the first part of my body to start aching. And I knew from working in the hospital, like with COVID-19 being very real, even though it was in its very early stages. So I was self-isolating partially anyway from my parents. So then I immediately just stayed in the room, and that was quite a tough night in terms of symptoms. I had severe body aches where I couldn't even turn in bed without it being sore, and headaches and fever. And I know in comparison to other people, those symptoms are very mild through what they went through, but it was still a tough few days. And then the next day I obviously had to call into work sick and then go about getting a test for COVID-19.
You got the test, and you then waited for the results to come back. Were you long waiting?
I wasn't, because working in a hospital, the contact tracing is so important. They kind of have it as an urgent test. So I got my results the following day.
Did you kind of hope or think at any point, Siobhan, that you might have just had a flu?
I really hoped. And, when I rang into work sick, because my symptoms were very flu-esque, like, fever, body aches, headaches, I wasn't having many respiratory symptoms. I thought maybe it was just a flu. And I kind of had a sense of, I was a little bit embarrassed, like ringing into work saying, not that I'm sick, but, I need to get this test because the risk involved if I did have it and I went back to work or, I was around family. So I was kind of, I wasn't too happy about having to ask for the test. And then obviously waiting for the results, you really pray, because even when you start to feel better, there's just 2 weeks involved, isolating, and you're not able to help and work, and you're not able to, move around your house freely. So I was really hoping to get the negative results.
Why were you embarrassed?
Because I just felt I had the flu. Felt I had a typical flu-like symptoms, and I was having to ask for this test that, there was many people around the country needing, and it just... it's not something I wanted to ask for,
Yeah.
But it was so necessary, even though I never had respiratory symptoms. I only had fever, body aches, and headaches. I still had to make sure I had got the test.
And you were doing the right thing. Remember that point with the ads? They kept saying if you have a flu-like symptoms, if you're persistent cough, if you can't do X, Y, Z, get the test. So even though I think it was because it was March, the dates you're giving me suggest it was early enough days for you to think that's for somebody else.
Yeah, it was very early days that even the loss of smell and taste wasn't talked about. When that was a symptom I had but never noticed, you know, and that was only after everyone started giving me all these lovely home-baked goods that I actually couldn't taste anything. And that's when I realised as well that was the symptom I was having.
Let me ask you about the phone call. Was it a phone call that about the test when it came back that you got?
Yes.
Can I ask you, when they called you and they said, we have the test results back, what was going through your mind?
I was devastated, you know. I knew immediately from the phone ringing that it was going to be a positive result.
How did you know?
I had heard that you get a phone call if it's a positive result because there's so much involved.
I see.
And then there's an email notification to say you tested negative.
So when they said to you, Siobhan, I'm afraid it's not great news, you have tested positive for COVID-19, how did you feel at that point?
The overwhelming feeling was guilt. It really was. Because while I was lucky enough, I was sick, but I was lucky enough to not be extremely unwell. I immediately felt like I was a risk to people. Like, I was a danger to so many people. So I obviously cried my eyes out after I got off the phone. I held it together to tell my parents. I went and told my parents that I tested positive, and I'll always remember my poor mom crying and saying, you know, all I want to do is give you a hug. You know, and that's the difference with this illness. It's whenever I've been sick before, whenever I've needed people, people have always been able to gather around you, give you a hug, give you that comfort. When in this illness, you have to stay away. And that was definitely the toughest part of it all for both myself and my family.
It's so unnatural. When you hear bad news, the first thing you want to do to somebody is say, come in here, come over to me.
Yeah. And yet I had to walk the opposite way.
God.
You know, that was the toughest part now, seeing my mom cry and be worried for me. When I was sitting there worried for her and my father, you know, I was scared that maybe I had passed it to them.
Why did you say, I mean, it's obvious enough, but I'd like you to flesh that a little bit, Siobhan, if you wouldn't mind. Why did you say so quickly when I asked you how did you feel with the positive result, you said guilt straight away?
Because it stuck with me. You know, that's the feeling I had. It was so overwhelming. I couldn't stop crying. And I just let myself cry because it's kind of important to let yourself feel the emotions. And I just felt like I was a risk. You know, I was never worried about myself. I was probably naive in that as well, that I thought my symptoms weren't too bad at the time, that I'd be okay. And I was just scared that my mom and dad, like, they're in their 60s, albeit early 60s. I don't know if they vouch for me for saying that. But, you know, they're a risk as well, and they fall into the older category. So, of course, I was worried had I passed it to them.
Yeah,
they were my first concern.
You felt toxic.
Yeah, it's a very strange feeling to be sick, but also know you're a danger or you're a risk to people.
You obviously isolated then in the house with your folks, and you went off to a room upstairs. And here you are, 27 years old, a sporting person who is used to socialising, being fit, loving parents, all of it, all good in your life. And suddenly you find yourself in a room where you nearly had to ring a bell to come near you.
Yeah. My mum did give me a bell now. She was taking...
Did she?
She was messing. Yeah, she gave me a little bell to ring, but she was messing with it now. I obviously never used it. But it was very strange. Like, my dad always says I used the house as a B&B between work and football. I'm never there. I just come and go and eat and leave.
Siobhan,
and
all dads say that to their daughters. I can guarantee you. Don't feel alone in it that way. But go on anyway.
And so then I self-isolated in my room from the minute I became symptomatic.
Mm.
But also knowing that this is where I'll be for 2 weeks. For the first week, I was so fatigued that I actually just slept the whole week away. So that passed by quickly enough, so I was lucky for that. But yeah, it was very strange to be stuck in between, like, in one room. It's, you run out of jobs to do. I was lucky the house was in, my room was in front of the house, so I was actually able to communicate through people and through the window. So that was nice to be able to just see people.
God, what a strange, strange existence.
I didn't even see my mum and dad. Like, we used to FaceTime to catch up on how people's days were.
Upstairs, downstairs, FaceTime.
Yeah, yeah. You were even between the rooms next door, because my parents used to leave my meals at the door. And then I'd come out and collect them when they were gone and eat them. And, you know, it was a very strange experience.
Of course. I just remembered, sorry, as you're talking, the early days of this, and being on the Late Late Show with Dr. Sarah, and we went down to the Fair City set and we showed what isolation would look like. And as we were doing it, because no one had done it and we hadn't talked about it as a country at length, but we were advised this would be helpful to people. And I thought, no, this isn't going to happen. I mean, like, I couldn't believe, no, I felt it was so odd and outrageous that it could happen. And here you are describing exactly what had to be done and doing it so correctly.
It's just necessary. Like, it really, you know, the benefits far outweigh everything. It's just so important. And as small as it may seem, what you're doing, it's huge in the grand scheme of things.
You couldn't have said a truer word, Siobhan. The other thing I wanted to ask you briefly about is, you talk about guilt, but I remember having to write, one of the most difficult things I ever had to do was write the list of people for contact tracing and the names. Because I felt, are we going to cause disruption to these people's lives and their families? And was there irresponsibility along the way in terms of people maybe getting it? Like you describe about your parents and all that. Writing that list of contact tracing, tell me about that for you.
Well, yeah, it was extremely tough, but it was something I started thinking about immediately on the Monday morning when I had called in to work sick, because I knew what the pathway was that you would have to give these names. And it's that guilty feeling, you know, you're giving these names, you're telling these people that you have COVID-19 and there's a potential risk that they may have contracted from you. And it's awful. It is that guilty feeling that, have I disrupted these people? Have I put them at risk? Have I put their family at risk? You know, it's really tough. And I remember on Monday night with Dr. Houlihan, and he mentioned that the list that people are giving is growing. And that's something I think we all need to really be conscious of. And it's something we have to remember in everyday activity. Anyone can become symptomatic, because it's such a contagious virus. Any environment is risky. So we always need to be conscious of who we've been in contact with. And there's a potential that there's a risk involved. And I think we really need to just hone in on trying to make that list as small as possible.
You came out the other side, clearly, but yet you hear stories about people weeks later still feeling fatigue, exhaustion maybe, but just not feeling quite right.
Yeah, I was, again, very naive, I suppose, thinking that it was the 2 weeks in my room where when I got out of that, I was over the worst of it, when really my battle started when I came out of isolation with my return to normal life. It took a long time. I'm 3 months on, and I'm just starting to feel back to normal in terms of sport. And I know I'm still lucky in comparison to a lot of people that went through this virus, that they had a much tougher time. But sport is such a huge part of my life, and it was completely, really, it was taken away from me in terms of I couldn't perform. And then the mental aspect comes in there. You know, you start to feel really down, and it becomes a mental struggle as well.
Sure.
So really, my darkest days were after isolation, trying to overcome the lasting effects of the virus.
Could I ask you to do me a favour and tell me your thoughts on people of kind of your age group and their parents who want to fly to the sun in the next month or two?
It's tough. It's definitely not something I will be doing. You know, it's very understandable. We've had to change the way we behave so much, and we've all made so many sacrifices to get us to where we are today. Like, the reopening of the country has happened because we have all acted so well and so effectively in trying to reduce the danger of this virus in our community. And it's just, you know, every trip I make, I think about the risk involved. And the risks involved with getting on a plane and going abroad is just far too big to even consider for myself. So I would just hope people always consider the risk they put themselves at, but also their family and their friends. And I think watching the show on Monday night, I haven't watched last night yet, but watching
the Primetime Investigates.
Yeah, I cried from start to finish, because even though working in a hospital, I've witnessed it firsthand from the start, to show the effects of family not being able to be with their family and loved ones when they're sick is just horrific. And I just think we can't get ahead of ourselves. Like, we're not through the other side of this yet. We're putting up a great, great fight against it, and we're doing really well, but we're not at all through the other side, and we still need to act as we are now and act in the best interests of ourselves and our loved ones in everything we do. And I just don't see how we can travel at the moment. And, like, Ireland is beautiful. You know, there's so much to see here and so many places that we can go to, and, you know, we've been lucky with weather in recent days. And I can't speak for everyone, but it's just not something that I will be wanting myself and my family to do anytime soon.
Okay. It's been good to talk to you, Siobhan. Appreciate you taking the time out of your working day. I know you're busy there. You've got to go back to your radiographer work this morning. So will you pass on my love and respect to your colleagues and friends there at the hospital?
I will, of course.
And I look forward to meeting you soon in real life, because I have great time for you and what you've been doing this week to get the message out to people. So Siobhan, mind yourself. We'll see you soon.
Thanks for having me, Ryan.
Siobhan Killeen there joining us on the phone during her coffee break this morning. Very good of her to join us. And I think if ever there was a salutary tale to be told, she just told it. The text number 51551. Ciarán O'Neill, good morning to you, Ciarán.
Good morning, Ryan.
Thanks for being in touch with us, because you are not unlike, in many ways, not unlike Siobhan and her story a minute ago. You fall into a bracket of people who are under 35, who are causing concern to people like Dr. Tony Houlihan. You are what age?
I'm 33.
33? Smoker?
No.
Okay, so you should have been in that safer category of people who contract COVID. You should have been whistling past the graveyard and on into your future.
Yeah.
And yet, you contracted COVID. What were the symptoms, just to go through that bit first?
I started off with a very slight cough, which escalated in about 24 hours to a severe fever above 40 degrees, and had the sweats and stuff like that then.
Okay, and when did all this happen, Ciarán?
The 22nd of March.
Okay, so kind of early days when it was all starting to kick off. The fever you got then, that escalated too?
That escalated. I rang the GP who instructed me to go straight down to the hospital. I did, and I was brought in to resuscitation, and the following day put into an induced coma.
So you
which should have been for a few days. However, it ended up being for 16 days. Because my lungs weren't responding, they were actually getting worse.
So this was quite an escalation then, from a bit of a fever to a cough to fever to a ventilator in an induced coma at the age of 33. So when you were brought to the hospital, you hadn't been tested before, had you? You were just told, geez, you're...
No, I was awaiting a test. Ah. The GP was to organise one. And the day before I went into the hospital, I received a text message to say that I wasn't actually getting the swab.
I see. But once you got into the hospital, they said, OK, you're in trouble. Let's get you sorted out here. Do you remember being, you know, those initial hours in the hospital, or was it all a blur?
Not particularly. Sure. I remember being brought into hospital by my partner. And after that, it's the week I was coming home is what I remember. I experienced a level of delirium while in hospital as well, which made things worse for me when I awoke from the coma.
16 days in a coma on a ventilator. Did any of your organs suffer or what was happening?
No, that was one of the risks they were telling my partner about. As the longer I stayed on the ventilator, the higher risk to the rest of my organs. But I was very lucky that didn't happen. I have suffered rapid weight loss in the coma. And as a result of that, I've suffered nerve damage in my leg.
Yeah.
So I have two nerves in my leg that are damaged now. Very limited mobility and very little feeling in the left foot as well. So I'm doing physio at the moment.
Okay, so you there was that damage done from that amount of time. When you're in a coma, what work is the ventilator doing, at the risk of asking an obvious question, but maybe...
For 3 or 4 days, Ryan, it was keeping me alive, 100% doing all the breathing for me. That's when things got really bad. And they began proning me then, and luckily enough, my lungs responded after the third or fourth day, and slowly began breathing again.
It's just so worrying, because we kept hearing stories about younger people being okay, and I suppose that's probably why you got in touch with us.
It was, because you see on social media now, Ryan, just people are getting bored from sitting around for 4 months, and they do. There is a level of, I think I'm invincible to this because I'm 30 or 40, but that's not the case.
You also have people, the COVID deniers, who are, you know, the crazy horses.
That's difficult to deal with as well.
In what sense?
However, you just see some people posting some stuff on social media, and they're denying it's there, or they're saying it's just a government thing. It is hard to no one has been through what I've been through when they're posting this, and that's very difficult to see.
Yeah, you need to delete those people really from your timeline.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
they'll only
absolutely
understand it when they're in an induced coma
and
for 16
then it's
days.
Too late.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I wouldn't, regardless what their beliefs are, you wouldn't wish this on anybody.
Of course not. Of course not. How do you feel about the planes filling up now as of the next few weeks?
Disappointed. I think too many people are. I understand everyone's bored of sitting at home, but this whole thing of looking to go away straight away is ridiculous. It's only going to lead to another lockdown.
You reckon they're going to come home with it?
Absolutely. You just need to turn on the news and see the other cases in Leicester or Costa del Sol, what's going on.
There are people who are listening who've bought their flight, and they're saying, you know, we've earned that money. We've earned that flight. We've earned our holiday. You know, give us a break. And they're also probably saying, you know, when we go over there, we're not going to be going crazy. And that's fine, but there are others who will go crazy. Sorry, go on.
You can appreciate that and understand that, but you don't need to go crazy to contract this. I didn't earn this virus. I didn't earn the right to be in a coma. It just happened. And I took every precaution possible. Yeah. So, you know, it doesn't matter where they go. They're still not only a risk to themselves, but a risk to everyone else.
How are you doing now these days, Ciarán, since?
I'm coping better. Mentally, it was tough the last couple of weeks. Obviously, I've been kind of indoors since March. The pain is, I have 9 different types of tablets per day, Ryan, to be taking, and that eases the pain certain amounts of time during the day.
Sure.
But the pain is, when it comes, it comes in waves, and it's unbearable, Ryan, to be honest. So,
Will you tell everyone what your dad did for you when you got better?
My dad is a Congo veteran, and he presented me with his medals as his hero.
That's pretty big.
Yeah.
How did you feel when he handed those to you?
Oh, emotional. It doesn't describe it. Pride and just, I don't know.
I think it's one of the most moving things I've heard since this whole thing started.
Yeah, it was a lovely gesture from him to look at me and call me his hero after everything he's been through.
And, you know, looking at the prime time and the people that minded you, they should also be getting medals, as you know, but they want more than that, but they deserve more than that.
You know what, Ryan? I mean, it was tough being in hospital without your family, but with the doctors and nurses there, I actually felt I became part of a bigger family with them. They were unbelievable, and not just to me, but to everybody in hospital. I had nurses and doctors coming in when I woke up, and they were spending 5, 6, 7 minutes with me. Doctors and nurses I'd never even seen before, but they heard about me, and they just wanted to come in and spend them 5 or 6 minutes and just to see how I was.
It's remarkable. Ciarán, it's really been really lovely to talk to you today, and I'm happy you're not fully there, but you're on the mend. You've got a good heart, and you've got good people around you, so keep it that way and look after yourself, won't you?
Ryan, thank you so much.
Yeah, it was really nice to talk to you, and stay strong.
I will.
You got it. Take it easy. Look after yourself. Bye, Ciarán. Take care.
Bye-bye.